crossroads of empires, battleground of the ages, city of peace and of war. This is Jerusalem, where archaeology uncovers the empires of yesterday, where prophecy decodes the headlines of today. This is where history and prophecy come alive. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Welcome to Watch Jerusalem. I'm Chris Eames, and I'll be hosting the program for you today. Coming to you from Edstone, England again, a very wet, snowy and slushy Edstone, England. Just about didn't make it into work today. Had to take about three different routes with all the road closures due to all the flooding. And that's certainly more than can be said for Israel at the moment. Now, Israel's been going through their fifth consecutive winter of drought. This is the winter rainy season, where that much needed rain for the hot, dry season needs to come in. But for the fifth consecutive year, there just hasn't been the sufficient amount of rain. There has been a little bit of rain, intermittent rain through the winter season, but Israel is really in a predicament at the moment, and it's gotten to the point where the agriculture minister has called for mass prayers. He's come together with certain rabbinical authorities to organize these mass prayers to call on God to provide rain. Now, he has come under some flack for that, by those who believe he's in a secular position and shouldn't be taking these kind of measures. Now, he's also received his defense from those who support him, saying, hey, this kind of thing surely can't hurt. And certainly we do see in many cases when world leaders have, in a proper attitude, called on God for help in times like these, that God oftentimes does answer those humble requests when they are made. I'm reminded of the Australian Prime Minister, John Howard. I believe the year was 2006. Australia was going through a massive drought period, and it got to the point where Prime Minister Howard just called on the Australian people to come together in prayer, called for a national day of prayer that the drought might be ended. And almost immediately, the drought did end. So there have been certain amazing answers to proper, humbled prayer. But of course, it all comes down to the attitude, and it comes down to God's purpose and plan behind all of it. Well, 2017 is wrapping up, and what a year it has been. Our sister website, thetrumpet.com, is featuring an end-of-the-year summary of world events through this year, 2017. And I thought for the Watch Jerusalem program today would do the same, obviously with respect to Israel, the Middle East, and archaeology. So it's been the first full year that Watch Jerusalem has been on the airwaves, shall we say. I think it was possibly August 2016 that the website began, and this year certainly has provided no shortage of things to write about, and we'll go through some of those things on today's program. Now, 2017 has been quite a significant year for anniversaries. It's been 50 years since the liberation of Jerusalem during the 1967 Six-Day War. Really an incredible war there. Just miracles from start to finish during that war. And you can read about those absolutely incredible miracles that happened during that war on our website, Watch Jerusalem. I believe the article is called Miracles in 6 Days. Miracles that happened on the wider scheme of things for the war, and also personal miracles that happened to those who fought in that war. So 50 years of Jerusalem that has been marked. And of course, who can forget Trump's recent announcement recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's capital. So that all tied together quite nicely there. There has also been, we've also had the 100-year anniversary of the liberation of the Holy Land from the Ottoman Empire. As our listeners will know, the British came in 1917 toward the end of 1917, December specifically, and liberated the Holy Land. The Turks surrendered that land December 9th, 1917. And of course, as we go through these anniversaries, they do have quite a lot of prophetic significance, as you'll see on our website. The 50 years of Jerusalem coming under Israeli control is quite significant, because there is the biblical prophecy in Zechariah 14 that talks about half of Jerusalem falling to the Arabs. Now, of course, for half of Jerusalem to fall, that means beforehand all of Jerusalem must have been under the control of Israel. And for the past 2,000 years, that hadn't been the case, right up until 1967. And now Jerusalem belonged entirely to Israel. And now that we can see how that prophecy can come about now that Jerusalem belongs totally to Israel. And also, in the 100-year anniversary of the liberation of the Holy Land, if you take a look at our booklet on the website, the Proof of the Bible, it talks about the prophetic significance of that as well. We won't get into it on this program, but there is a very specific timeline, prophetic timeline, that meant that that liberation would happen on December 9th, 1917. And you'll have to read about that for yourself in our free booklet, The Proof of the Bible. But again, 100 years since that date, since the liberation of the Holy Land, since it was given up by the Ottoman Empire. And it has been 100 years since the Balfour Declaration. So certainly a lot of anniversaries this year. Now, there's been a lot going on in the archaeology world as well. As you know, as listeners will know, Watch Jerusalem features archaeology quite heavily on our website. And we've taken you through quite a few series on the website, quite a few archaeological series, and I'd certainly encourage you to check those out. There's a whole trove of articles there of historical research and material. Just to name a few of them, we've gone through the Bible's Buried Cities series, looking at, I believe, 8 cities throughout Israel that have been excavated and really, that frankly, prove what the Bible says is true, prove that these cities existed that the Bible talked about, and then within these cities, the various chronology of events that happened, proving the biblical record. We looked at Jericho and the discovery of the wall that crumbled away and outside of Jericho. We looked at Megiddo and Gezer and Hazor, all paralleling Solomonic-era construction as described in, I believe it's 1 Kings 9. We looked at Jerusalem and the Palace of David, Lachish, and the mighty destruction that occurred there at the hand of Assyrians. So many cities, so many discoveries. Do go and check those cities articles out. Then we had the civilizations articles, the series on the Bible's buried civilizations, looking at the Assyrians, the Egyptians, the Philistines, the Moabites, and many more, basically looking at the historical record and seeing that the Bible is brought to life through what has been discovered in archaeology. We had another series on the individuals of the Bible. So we move from the broad civilizations to the cities. We see how they're confirmed, how the biblical record about them is confirmed. And then we also zoom in to the individuals of the Bible. We looked at Nehemiah and his wall. We looked at the Elisha inscription and extrapolated on his life as shown through archaeology. We looked at Jeremiah and his archenemies, the princes Gedaliah and Jehukal, who have been proven through archaeology. So we look at these individuals, many more. Again, you can check those out on our website. Then we had the Antiquity of the Scriptures articles, where we take the Tanakh, the Hebrew Bible, or the Old Testament, as it's called, and we break it down into its three parts: the writings, the prophets, and of course the Torah at the start. So we look at these three subsections of the Hebrew Bible and we break it down, looking at archaeology, looking at textual examination, and finding out when these writings were actually written, if they were written when the Bible says, or if they were some kind of fraud much later. And some of the discoveries and textual analysis is actually quite surprising that confirms the biblical traditional date that these impressive holy books were written just when the Bible says. We also had our Genesis series that we featured, a three-part series where we look at the events that occurred before the human race was dispersed, events that we would expect to find recorded in some way or another in through various tribes, through various peoples, nations, all over the world. And of course, one part of this was the creation account. We see paralleling creation accounts very similar to the biblical account all over the earth. We see flood accounts, hundreds of flood accounts, absolutely incredible, describing some sort of a flood. So we see a common story theme that we would expect to be dispersed throughout all humanity because it occurred at that similar point in time. We all descended from Noah and his sons, so we would expect to carry that story in some form or another throughout our individual national histories. We also look at the Tower of Babel story, Tower of Babel, however you like to pronounce that. And of course, the Bible, Genesis 11, talks about how this event occurred just before that dispersion of humanity. So one would expect to find, if the Bible be true, a similar thread in national histories about the Tower of Babel. And the kind of national histories that record something similar to this are quite amazing, from Kenya to Burma to all over the world, far and wide. Traditions of a flood, traditions of the Tower of Babel, some form of that tradition, traditions of creation. It's quite an incredible study. And then we've had all our various other archaeological articles, from Balaam the prophet to Hagar and Mesopotamian surrogacy to to Naboth's vineyard in Jezreel. And in the coming month or two, we're about to take you through a new series of articles that will look at the discoveries of the archaeologist, Dr. Elat Mazar, some of the incredible discoveries that she has made while excavating Jerusalem. Another series that we've been recently featuring is the Biblical Nations series, the series on biblical national history. We look at the German people, the Russian people, the Chinese people, the Italians, the Turks, and so on. And we look at their biblical roots. Are these nations mentioned in the Bible? The Bible is very much a prophetic book. So these modern nations, are they discussed in the Bible? And where do their peoples come from? That series is by David Vigil, and it's a very comprehensive look at these national histories. And then in world news, we've seen a number of significant events this past year. For all intents and purposes, ISIS has been defeated. Just like we've forecasted, ISIS was the distraction in the Middle East, as we repeatedly said. As our editor-in-chief, Gerald Fleury, repeatedly said, ISIS, for all their savagery, they were really a small-time distraction in the Middle East. The big player is Iran, of course. They are the ones with the power. They are the ones securing control from all across the Middle East, working to build up their hegemony. Iran is the big player in the Middle East to watch out for. And since that time, since ISIS has been by and large defeated, we've seen Iraq essentially push America back out, saying, we want Iran to stay, we want you to leave. We've seen a Cold War, you could say, that has been raging between Saudi Arabia and Iran, and that too fulfilling Bible prophecy. You can read about that on our prophecy page on the website. these prophesied power blocks in the Middle East with Iran and her proxies on one side. We've talked about them being Iraq, Egypt coming under that control, and we can see that happening with Yemen. And we can see on the flip side a biblically prophesied alliance of Saudi Arabia, of other nations like the United Arab Emirates, like Jordan, like Syria. This will be an alliance that will come together in the coming months and years, as we prophesy about, as the Bible describes. Now, in terms of other regional news going on, this past year, we've had intelligence services talking about how Iran continues to breach the nuclear weapons agreement. Several German intelligence sources have confirmed that. And yet we see Iran actually threatening to tear that agreement up because of America's supposed provocations. Now, on top of that, we've seen Hamas relinquish a lot of ruling authority to Fatah. We've had the Temple Mount turmoil started when two Israeli Arab police officers were killed by a terrorist wielding a firearm that somehow made its way into the Temple Mount. And that ensuing turmoil, which evidence shows was evidently organized by Iran, just about erupted into another intifada. And we've had the massive show of Russian force in Syria recently, essentially winning the war for Bashar al-Assad. Of course, the West supported the opposition forces, and Russia quite clearly took the side of Bashar al-Assad. And really, at the cost of huge collateral damage, Russia basically won the war there for Bashar al-Assad, while the West basically muttered under their breath in righteous indignation and did exactly nothing, hardly anything to speak of. And then who could forget Trump's declaration of recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's capital? Now, I remember in Israel, I was with my Hebrew teacher. He was taking me on a tiul, on a trip through Jerusalem, discussing our surroundings, trying to anyway, in Hebrew. And I remember the decision coming through while we were on our trip, the election of President Donald Trump. The results of the election came through, and he was actually quite stunned. He didn't really know what to make of it. It almost seemed like the world was ending to him. He said his wife messaged him saying, "Is everything going to be all right?" It was really quite a scary moment for him. And no wonder, if you've been following the mainstream media during that time, they really trumped up Trump, sorry for the pun, to be virtually Adolf Hitler. And they used words to that effect, really. And so no wonder that kind of response that he had. But he did declare Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. So maybe my Hebrew teacher is having a rethink about that. Who knows? But in the time since, Guatemala has recognized Jerusalem as Israel's capital. It seems that at least half a dozen other countries, particularly from South and Latin America, are set to do the same. So all in all, it has been a big year for regional events in the Middle East, for archaeology, and for Watch Jerusalem, and no shortage of events to keep you posted on. And we're working on a new update of the Watch Jerusalem website, really beautiful looking website update, so stay tuned to that to feature these news events, these archaeological discoveries that are being made. Now, after the break, we'll take a look at some of the top archaeological finds of 2017. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
This is Watch Jerusalem on kpcg.fm. The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course is a distance learning program that makes the Bible clear and understandable. The correspondence course enables enrollees to learn what the Bible itself says about subjects that affect you and the world you live in.
This fascinating Bible course highlights and proves what the Bible says about morality, war, religion, terrorism, and other current events, focusing on the root causes of this world's many problems facing man, as well as their solutions. The Bible and this course also focuses on the reason mankind was created in the first place, the way to happiness, accomplishment, and fulfillment, as well as the truth behind important doctrinal questions, such as what happens after we die, the nature of God, the resurrection, the millennium, and other critical subjects. Enroll today in the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is Watch Jerusalem. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. If you've just joined us, we're going through the significant events of 2017. And now for the second half of this program, we'll look at some of the top archaeological finds of 2017. To begin things off, we'll have a look at the ancient seals discovery, the ancient bulle or stamped clay pieces that were discovered in the City of David this last year. A trove of these bulle that date from before the destruction of Jerusalem in 586 BC. Now, what's quite interesting about these bulle, these ancient official seal stamps, is they include a number of biblical names such as Phineas and Menachem. And what is particularly interesting about this collection is, according to the excavators, the presence of more traditionally Israelite names. So this is a large trove of bulle showing Israelite names rather than Judean names on them. Now, why is this the case? The likely answer is because they belong to Israelite refugees or their descendants who fled into Judah after the 720 BC destruction of the northern kingdom of Israel. So they speculate that some of these Israelite nationals fled down into the southern kingdom of Judah and were set up in official positions and thus were granted their own official seal stamps. Now, this does parallel exactly the biblical record. We read in 2 Chronicles 30 that King Hezekiah at that time period reached out to the northern kingdom of Israel, pleading with them to come to worship God, to come to the state of Judah. And the biblical account further does directly confirm that Israelites did immigrate into Judah and were living there after the Assyrian invasion. And you can see 2 Chronicles 30 and chapter 31 again about that. So this trove of ancient seals, ancient bulle, do confirm that Israelites were able to make it into the state of Judah and ended up becoming high-ranking officials, evidently, in order to receive their own seal stamps. Now, another discovery from this past year was the Mesopotamian surrogacy tablet. And we wrote about this in an article entitled Hagar and Mesopotamian Surrogacy, What a New Discovery Says. Now, this tablet was written in ancient cuneiform Assyrian script, and it was discovered in Turkey dating to around 2000 BC. And it is in the form of a marriage contract stating that if the couple cannot produce a child after 2 years, then a slave will be brought in as a surrogate mother to produce a male descendant for the husband and wife. After doing so, the slave mother was then to be set free after giving birth to a male. So quite an interesting tablet here. And the parallels to what happened between Abraham and his wife's handmaid, Hagar, are unmistakable. Now, clearly, God didn't intend for Hagar to be taken in as a surrogate mother. He did promise that Sarah would be the one to have the child. So this wasn't what God intended. It wasn't biblically lawful. But this act, though, was quite evidently legal in ancient Mesopotamia. And Abraham, as a leading light, as a leading educator in the Mesopotamian region would have been in tune with these kind of laws, would have known them quite well. And so this shows a precedent for what he did with Hagar and what his wife did in offering Hagar to him. Now, of course, after Hagar delivered Ishmael, after she conceived and gave birth to the son, there was the jealousy and discontent within the household, and Hagar did stay around for a little while, but things got to the point where God instructed Abraham that Hagar and Ishmael be released. Now, according to this tablet, the surrogate mother was to have been freed anyway after giving birth. So perhaps even the pagan Mesopotamian lawmakers had foreseen the potential for severe household conflict. And of course, had it all been done according to God's purpose from the beginning, this domestic nightmare would never have occurred. Now, the other quite big significant archaeological discoveries have been occurring in Timnah. Now, this is in the area of what is commonly called King Solomon's Mines. Now, there's been findings from the 10th century BC in this area of Timnah. This was part of the ancient kingdom of Edom at that time period, and a recently discovered copper smelting site has been found there, alongside numerous sling stones and the remains of a massive wall. I believe it's about 5 meters high and several hundred meters long. Now, this is quite interesting because the Bible records in 2 Samuel 8 that during the 10th century BC, during David's time period, David came into Edom. He had quite a massive battle around that area, and he set up garrisons all throughout Edom. And verse 14 says that, quote, "Throughout all Edom he, David, put garrisons, and all they of Edom became David's servants. And the Lord preserved David whithersoever he went." Now, in this site, we see This dates to David's time period, the 10th century BC. We see evidence of conflict, and we see evidence of a massive wall here. So in this area was a lot of copper smelting that was going on. This is the world's earliest copper smelting area. It's believed to have started up around 1,000 years before David's time, but its copper production actually peaked during David and Solomon's time period, the 10th century BC. And we have to ask, why is that the case? Well, the Bible makes it very clear. Solomon used a lot of metal products, a lot of copper products in building the temple in particular. And he needed that vast mining operation in order to produce the needed metals for his construction. So it's no surprise that we see dating to his time period in an area that the Bible says was controlled by Israel at that time, this massive production of metals that would have been used surely for the temple. Now, this is quite a significant copper smelting area that it's been known about for quite some time, and the general area still to this day is used for mining copper. Another discovery that happened just recently this year in this area was that of clothing dated to the 10th century BC. Really beautiful clothing. You can look at pictures of it online, I believe on the Times of Israel. They ran quite a good article showing images and a video of this clothing that was discovered. Really beautiful clothing that showed that these workers during Solomon's time period, surely working for King Solomon and producing these precious metals for the temple, were wearing beautiful clothes. These weren't any mere slaves wearing rags. These were people wearing beautiful, beautiful clothing, nicely weaved clothing, and very professionally dyed as well. Nice blues and reds, and you can see pictures of that online. So that's an amazing area, really, for archaeological discovery in Timnah, which is in the Negev region toward the south of modern-day Israel. Now, there are also a number of other finds that have been found, many of them non-biblical, but nonetheless very exciting. There was the discovery of an ancient pagan ritualism center that occurred at Libna while it was under Canaanite control, again paralleling what the Bible said before it came under Israelite control, which we find in the Bible and in archaeology. There was the discovery of many large jugs, as well as a ritual chalice found at Shiloh, the place of the tabernacle. And these dated to the time of Eli and Samuel, and they showed evidence of being abandoned suddenly. And the Bible says that there was the massive conflagration with the Philistines at this time period, so it's no wonder that such objects would have been abandoned so suddenly. Now, there's many other archaeological articles on our website. Again, do check them out. And the thing with archaeology is sometimes extraordinary things have already been found and we simply don't know about them. 2017 may well have yielded up many more significant archaeological artifacts, but until they are properly studied and released, we simply yet don't know about them. So stay tuned, we'll keep you up to date with the latest and greatest in biblical archaeological discoveries. And that's about all we have time for today's program. Thank you very much for listening, and thank you very much to all of our avid listeners and readers over this past year. Again, if you have any feedback or questions, please email us at letters@watchjerusalem.co.il. Thank you for those to those who have left feedback. We certainly appreciate that. And stay tuned to the website. There are many new, exciting developments ahead. Until next time, shalom.